Welcome, allies.
Welcome.
Well, it is very beautiful. What is rising due east right now is 9 degrees Libra. It's a kind of placeholder because that's where Mars will station and go direct, and that will be in May 21st. And its image is a canoe having passed, you know, dangerous rapids, enters calm waters. So we're going there, but how we get there is the dynamic. So Mars stationed to retrograde at 27 plus Libra, which is a person in deep gloom, unnoticed, a glowing circle of angels surrounds them. So beautiful, because we're all that person in deep gloom, but together we're the glowing circle of angels. This is a great example of fly-by-night instantaneous Venusian flash mob, because we really only told people about it, you know, about a minute ago, and here we all are. So, blessed Rob and everybody. So I'm just back from whale camp in Baja, Mexico, and from Loretta. And we say, may the playful, loving, forgiving hearts, the hearts of the gray whales weigh 285 pounds, and their tongues weigh 1,000 pounds. So may the playful, loving, forgiving hearts of the gray whales inform and guide our hearts and provide perspective whereby the petty posturing of puny humans is revealed as ridiculous, coyotes, and dissolved ocean beings into humility when contrasted with the magnificence of the beings all around us who are the cooperators standing by. Yes. So let me introduce the operators who are standing by because it is such a powerful, great time. This day is the vernal equinox. We're coming past a powerful full moon. I am just back from the whales. We don't want to sentimentalize, but we do want to honor the extraordinary quality. I mean, many of you might have heard, you know, me say, and I'll just say it again, the story of the whales of Laguna San Ignacio, which is an extraordinary place. But by the power of molecular distribution, we can waft blessing and what they have to say or convey to us, may it be everywhere. So first, of course, I have actual coyote hair. Sometimes I fib and say I do, but now I really do. so actual coyote hair with Syrian tobacco creates muti. Muti means power and medicine. True power is that which heals. We invite power into the world. We do not source it. And that's, again, part of the world's great conundrum. It's mistaken dominance and control for power. And Pluto would chime in and say, dominance is the toxic mimic of power. True power is invited. So by coyote hair, and this is also true, not just made up, all of this coyote hair has been in a pouch where it's been spewed upon by gray whales just a foot away. Just phoom. So it's coyote whale blessing with Syrian tobacco. May it be beautiful, what's underneath Syria. So we say, O spirit of the compassionate trickster redeemer, may we be your agent. May we be agents of the trickster redeemer at this time of dire beauty. It's everywhere.
A hairball.
A hairball. Exactly. A hairball. It sounds like an Indian blessing. A hairball. Ooh, what is that beautiful word? A hairball. So, yes, commerce between the worlds. So the gray whales, okay, so we've just been there, and I wonderful scout, Skookum scout, Meredith Pond, did the logistics and the hard work, and we took 4 lucky people that we magnetized from here. I just said, by the way, and people were, may go there again. But it is an extraordinary place, unique, because the San Ignacio Lagoon, for millennia, really, because we have pictographs from Baja, 7,500-year-old cave paintings depicting shaman-like figures in muumuus, sort of shapeless figures, but cavorting with pictures of whales and dolphins, 7,500 years old, so very ancient relationship of some kind. so it's a very ancient land. So for millennia, the gray whales in their arduous journey from north, you know, way north, would go south to mate and conceive and then also give birth as well to their calves in this lagoon. So for centuries, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th centuries, humans would go there to kill the babies and calves. And it's one of the things about heart opening, because one of the main whalers was a man named Charles Melville Scammon, who recorded much of what we know about the gray whales, and he was a whaler, and then he came to regret that as he learned more about them. We love the word respect because it means to look at twice, to look at again, re-again, spect, see. So again, if we take Aretha Franklin, respect, look again. And if you still don't like somebody, look again, look again, look again, find something to respect. So it's a curious phenomenon of many colonial people whose hearts were hardened, who then, the more they respected, the more they looked again, gained real respect and changed their hearts. It's the quality of medicine. So from being whaler to being recorder of the extraordinary kinship, the extraordinary concern and care of these beings for their young, things that we so want. And it reminded me of Bishop Landa, who was a colonial guy who was in charge of destroying much of Mayan culture and books. And then he began to kind of look at them going, oh, these are kind of cool. And then became the protector. Again, the person who wrote Amazing Grace was a slaver. And then he respected. He looked again, and then he looked again, and he was like, oh, no. And that's why he wrote Amazing Grace. So this change of heart quality from respect, from looking again. So what happened in the late 70s is Pachico Mayoral, who died last year, may he be blessed, and just was talking to his son, Pancho, saying, well, his spirit is around the lagoon everywhere. And then he choked up. But it was in the late 70s that Pachico was out in his little panga, his little fishing boat, and this gray whale came up. Now, the entire history was the gray whales were very fierce. They were called devilfish because when their young were attacked, they would head right for the boats and smash them with their tails, whack, and kill people. So this whale came up, you know, and that's the only thing that was known about them. And Pachico was terrified at first, but it was sort of like, hello, I'm really cute. And he began to tentatively kind of caress it and was like, and then from then on in that lagoon, whales would approach humans, and only there. Because talking to Pancho, again, there's much concern, like, would many people going there to intimately play with the gray whales, would that endanger them later? No. Because nowhere else on their journey, they go up through the Channel Islands, they go past here, Point Reyes, and they're on their way hugging the coast because the orcas are their main predator, hugging the coast all the way up to the way north. And they do not have human interaction anywhere on that journey, only in this lagoon. So it is an extraordinary place. And it really does just amaze us because the gray whales, they do come up, and they're in much better shape than 4 years ago when I first went. There's many, many more, which is a good sign. And they come up and you know, everybody's just babbling like an idiot going, oh, hello, and we're so sorry for being human and blah, 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 blah. And they're like, whatever. but we're just here to play. And they come up and they play, and then a number of times also, which I'd never seen before, they roll over, and as one of our guides explained, incredible trust, because they have no sternum. So rolling over is where the spear would go in before, and so they roll over in front of us, and we go, oh, this is so cute, this is so darling. Really like dogs, like cats, like everything that is beguiling, going, oh, and this quality of beguilingness. And so they head to the boats, and then they do play. They pop up and go, hello, and then the little ones, meaning more than the size of the boat, will actually kind of lift the boat a little bit, and then go, ha, 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 and go, Mom, can I keep them? And it's like, and then up on one side, and then on the other side, and then they go away, and they go, oh, goodbye, and then they turn around and go, just kidding, we're back again. And it's so witty, and it is so vast and heartwarming. And when we were there, we were going out twice a day in the pangas, and it is, you know, it's hard to get there, and it's challenging to go out from shore, you know, over waves, ba-boom, 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 it's earned. And it's when I ran into Pancho on the way to whale camp, Pancho Mayoral, who is the son, you know, I was saying, ooh, you know, it's this dodgy thing that we all want to think about as how access to sacred places becomes more paved. It used to be that it took a very long time to get there, and most of it was dirt roads, and now it's paved and then dirt roads. And I go, this is dodgy. It's a delicate moment, isn't it, for so much in the world? And he says, yes. He was speaking with somebody who said, another ally of his, bad roads, good people. Good roads, bad people. And we go, yeah, it's the value of hard to get to places. It's part of why I love teaching on Cortez Island in British Columbia. At first, it's like, it's hard to get there. Ooh, it's hard to get there. You have to really want to get there. And the people who live there say, yeah, it's the last, Cortez Island, it's the last ferry stop, you know, before open water. It's like ferry, that's it. So it's worth the journey, the value of hard to get to places for hard to get to sacraments. And part of the extraordinariness is when each time when the lagoon has been threatened, because in the 90s, Mitsubishi Corporation was going to destroy the lagoon by building a giant salt plant there. And the best of humans, international environmental humans, many who were poets as well as environmentalists, as all scientists used to be, you know, gathered. But they also gathered to collaborate with the whales to save it. And again, just to retell the story, the last time I was there, Pancho said the whales knew what they had to do because the president of Mexico had approved this terrible, terrible plan. But the fishermen gathered together and said, well, just come out in the boats with us. And again, Pancho said the whales knew what they had to do. He said he'd never seen them so cute, so beguiling, so whatever. And the president of Mexico's wife and child were just weeping, because you do, you just weep. As scientists have said, I think the whales are forgiving us. And I like redefining forgive as to mean to give energy for change. Because then who couldn't we forgive, including ourselves, for small and large things? So he said the whales were so beguiling. And the president's wife and child were just streaming with tears. And the president's heart was opened, and he canceled the project. So it was the work of many, 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 many humans doing hard work, environmental work, and the whales themselves. And so we take this whale medicine of how do we become strategists, not by, you know, as I like to say, the whales did not come up and go, you toady lackey for colonial imperialism, dingbat. They go, no, we're going to open your heart. We're going to open your heart so vastly that you cannot do wrong. And it was that quality that we want to take with us, you know, again, to love disharmony back into harmony creates a greater harmony than existed before. Because at this vernal equinox, you know, the sun has just entered Aries, very exciting. And so it is the time, this dynamic time of green fire, you know, kind of liveliness. And Aries is the time, it used to be called, or it's traditionally called ruled by Mars, but really what it means is incarnation of Mars. So like reading a person's chart, we go, well, where's Mars? And we go, well, Mars is in Libra, Venus's sign. Some grumpy astrologers call it the fall or the detriment, Mars and wussy old Venus's sign. We go, no, it's really great, and we need it. Because Mars is retrograde, as I said, having stationed at Person in Deep Gloom, Glowing Circle of Angels, going back to go forward at Canoe, having passed Dangerous Rapids into calm water. But Mars is in Venus's sign, manners. Mars is retrograde, appears to be going backwards, really a planet representing a part of all of us connected to everything in the world that it resonates with. I think of retrograde planets as going on a vision quest to remember. And this very literally says to remember manners and kinship with Mars, with animals, with flora and fauna, to remember kinship with the rest of the beings on this planet, and to engage in opening heart as all the trickster redeemers do. Again, Scheherazade, you know, and Inanna. I mean, all of them, effective strategy is not kind of blah, blah, blah. Because we remember, you know, John Michael Greer saying, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something. He said, the number two will only create conflict. Rah, 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 rah. And there's a lot of that, you know, everywhere. Rah, rah, rah. And he says, what two needs is three, which is the unifying story. Here comes Jupiter. And that resolves it. It turns it into a spiral. So as storytellers, all of us, you know, as those who we dedicate now, this night, you know, for this season, not to be seduced into which side, you know, which side are you on? We go, no side, the unifying story side. You know, the magnetizing, irresistibly eloquent story that opens everyone's heart. We're going that way. To really resolve the core issues of what has resulted in so much human rudeness and conflict in the world. So remembering kinship, and so Mars is very specifically also our, you know, it's energy, it's our instinct, it's our relationship to animals. All of the great fairy tales remind us of this. Almost all the gods and goddesses are riding something. You know, they have a ride. Akilanda, who is the Hindu goddess that comes from the power of being broken on the floor. She was a big hit when somebody wrote a great essay about her a couple of years ago. People were like, yeah, bring her back, you know, the power that comes from being broken. But she rides on the crocodile of her own fear, going, woohoo! You know, so this ride, and one of the great stories told by Heinrich Zimmer of the tale of the Prince Canetta is that he sets forth, and he's betrayed by an evil stepmother, and he says this is all the initiation into what it is to be a leader. There's always a kerfuffle at the beginning. You must be betrayed, and you must be betrayed, and you must betray so that you have compassion for everything. So he sets forth on a humble shaggy pony, and when they come to a dangerous place. Oh, I'm so glad there's a little dog back there. Hi there. Little emissary from Wolf's Land, very handsome guy. You're doing a great job. I'm a big fan of your work. There we go. So when he comes to a dangerous thing, the little pony says, you know, again, this is kind of a Pluto thing, let go of control. Give me my head. Give me my reins, because I know how to get us through this. And so that's what the Prince Canetta does. He drops the reins, gives the pony its head, and the pony says, you hang on tight. And they soar over the burning river and up the glass mountain and, longer story, redeem the world. And then he has to do a terrible thing. The pony says, now you must kill me. And he goes, no, I couldn't possibly kill you. You're my best friend. And he goes, if you don't kill me, you know, you and I will both die and it will be terrible. And it's a longer, interesting story. But what Zimmer says is, you know, again, to be betrayed and to betray is part of the kerfuffle of the fairy tale in which the hero or heroine always blows it and has to go through many things in order to do good. But what this relates to is our Mars. You know, this quality of intelligence that we have access to, especially now and especially this season, it's our wise ride, it's our wise instinct, that when we come to something so scary, that Mars part of us that's symbolized by animals in myth and in fairy tales says, let go of control, give me my head, because I know what to do. I know how to cross the burning river and up the glass mountain. So that Mars part of us, and in your mind's eye, you know, through this evening and through this season, think of, you know, what is your ride? What are all of us riding? Because we're gonna ride forth at the end, you know. What is our ride that is our wise animal instinct that knows what to do when we don't know what to do, and that is respectful? Now, in the beautiful language, you know, of this sky-earth story, Mars is, you know, it's energy, it's instinct, it's the energy we metaphorically run on, the fuel we run on, you know, and we say some, you know, we can be befoibled and we can run on, you know, snark is a very gummy fuel, really as gummy as tar sands, metaphorically. We go, very gummy fuel, flag on that play, invite you to change to something, you know, jollier to run on. But it's also the fuel, the energy that we use as a culture. And it's why great ally Bob Goff says when he's talking to, you know, kind of right-wing Christian audiences, he has a great, you know, PowerPoint, and he goes, we don't want to run on the fuels from hell, fracking and oil, bleh. We want to run on the fuels from heaven, sun and wind, you know. So our metaphoric agility and our willingness to tell the story and to accommodate everything, we say magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything, rather than have an opinion about everything. You know, we get to, Pluto provides a composting cauldron into which to throw things, and I think approve, disapprove wants to go into the cauldron. The gods, the beings, the animals, the whales say, we don't care if you approve or disapprove of everything, of anything. Are you willing to cooperate with it, to spiral with it, going, I wonder how I cooperate with this, as opposed to, I don't approve of this, I don't like this. And it's like, God, the gods, the divine, whatever metaphor we want to use, don't care if we approve or disapprove or like or dislike something. Are we willing to cooperate with it? You know, what is the opportunity at this moment? You know, and people under great pressure, I love the movie Life is Beautiful. How many people have seen Life is Beautiful? It's a pretty great trickster film about the power of the story to change reality. And it's poignant and sad. Much terrible things happen. But we'll remember that the great the great hero when he's counting on people who let him down, he doesn't go, oh, I'm so disappointed. And let me remind everybody that when people were saying, oh, I'm so disappointed about Obama, it's like, God, it's like a talking memo from the reality police, because disappointed means I am in the underworld powerless. So every time people say, oh, I'm so disappointed, I'm in the underworld powerless, we go, do you really want to do that? There are so many other words, you know, bamboozled, confounded, hilarified, I mean, whatever. You know, we have richness of language, and the more we expand our language, because culture, you know, culture runs through words at a tremendous pace. You know, like, you know, we go to sleep when we've heard things over and over again, even though I'm saying some things over and over again. Divine feminine. You know, it's like, yes, oh, that's fantastic. You know, it's like more words, more play, more, you know, again, we have this fantastic language. We remember that to react to anything is to carry around a portable prison. You know, for ourselves and others, it's a hot thing in a hot world to cultivate an ever larger repertoire of responses derived from all the plants and animals is to align ourselves with nature's evolutionary ingenuity and to be a liberator of circumstances. You know, everybody feels freer, you know, more options. Surprise is part of that, the value of using original, surprising language, because anything that has been said over and over again, there's a little prison already made for it. But to be unexpected, you know, I was going, whoa, is liberating. The symbol for Uranus, how we draw it, it's like a H with a circle drop below it. So it looks like an archaic jail key, you know, unlocking things. It's the Hafez thing that we've heard so often that it might put us to sleep. But anyway, we'll try it again. You know, Hafez says, you know, the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners. And this is really useful because it handles the Piscean Neptunian martyrdom specialness demon. Oh, I'm so special that I'm dying of because my wounds are. You know, and it says, no, you know, everybody's job is to toss people a key. That's it. That's it. You know, here's a key. You can wear it as a necklace if you want, but I recommend unlocking yourself. But everybody's job ends here. Here's a key. Ah, workout. You know, and so. You know, that quality, so the quality of respect, which is why, you know, language is always bubbling up. You know, we throw it into the cauldron where it gets replenished and refreshed and then bubbles back up, which is why etymology is so fabulous, because it's a kind of archaeological kind of bubbling to where it's all animistic and alive. You know, inauguration comes from the augur, the diviner who would walk out into nature, and nature would reveal through patterned beauty who the most responsible human was, and then they would be inaugurated by the augurs. You know, disaster against the stars, consider with the stars. But respect is a new one that somebody in the Trickster Training Council reminded me of, Michael Gere, whose name I will never forget. Anyway, but he said, you know, respect means to look at twice, and I go, ooh, that's a good one. Just as, you know, our understanding of the world as symbolic gives us an advantage. And it was another ally who said, you know, the etymology of symbolic, sim means together and ball means to throw. Symbolic is to throw it together. And it says either we have a symbolic relationship to the world or the world is diabolic, which means thrown apart. So symbolism is the tonic that heals the symbolic heals diabolic. So we're cultivating our symbolic realm. And this is once we have things in the symbolic realm, we have avenues of effective personal and cultural change that aren't available just in the kind of proscribed muggle realms. Again, something I've told a long time, but I can't think of a better one. Okay, here we go. Because it gives the example so well. And it was spiritual teacher, long estranged from her son, years. And she was like, send me a dream. Send me a dream. So she had a dream in which there was an octopus wrapped around her son's heart. So she was like, whoa, that's a dream. And so she did not go into years of Jungian analysis. She, in her mind, in her waking mind, shapeshifted into a dolphin that gently butted against the octopus around her son's heart in her mind's eye until it let go and swam away. And then several hours later, her son called for the first time in years and said, this is so silly, let's work it out. So if we can have it as a symbol, we can then metaphorically shapeshift into the animal medicine or the quality of the medicine, you know, that will resolve that on that level. And this brings us to what is unique about this equinox, because people celebrate equinoxes 25,000 years. We know this really important coming into balance, holding the contrast of the extraordinary whales, because we were so lucky to be out there in that vast desert on the edge of the laguna with whales as our primary focus. No Wi-Fi, no cell phones, no nothing, whales. And then coming back into kind of like hearing human stuff going small and large going, no, whoa. And then remember the real news, the real news of forgiveness and play and kinship and wishing each other well. And that nature is so harsh without humans mucking it up. I mean, it's an arduous journey these whales undertake without humans. We go, it's hard enough for everybody without us mucking it up. But the real news, so the metaphoric agility. So what is unique? So equinox equal, coming into poison balance. What is unique about this? And I love my wonderful hosts here, Gallagher's. But I had said to Bill Gallagher, who is a good poet, scientist, that somebody had said, you know, on the equinox moment, you can balance an egg on its end. He's like, so I said, I've heard this. I've never quite done it, you know. And so we did test eggs before the equinox, and then fall over. And then as we got closer to the equinox moment, you know, which was 9:57 a.m. this morning, you know, we both said, ooh, they feel more stable. And I couldn't quite get it, but Bill, my ally, he got his egg to balance. At the exact moment of the equinox, the egg balanced. It might still be there, you know, but it balanced, like, perfectly. And we go, wow, that is so cool. Poise. Can we humans be humble enough to be inspired by an egg? You know, going, right, can we gather balance and poise and tap into the intelligence of poise and calm and balance at this time, going, oh, really good. So that's apparently always true. So that's something that was like, maybe not. Oh, it is. Ooh. And then part of the beauty of now, respect and vision, is Neptune. You know, for the first time in 165 years, it's been slowly moving into its own sign of Pisces, which is the realm of all fairy tales, all powerful myths, all anything that has ever moved people, going all the way back, of course, to Neptune in Pisces, the sea. You know, for as long as humans can remember, our imagination has been tied to water and the sea, reverie and reflection and the romanticism of the ocean and the mysterious beings that surface from there and go, ooh. And it's also, it's so great to be watching, you know, into the dark sea going, ooh, was that a shadow or a being? Is that a shadow or a being? And then the whales go, it's me. And you go, oh, that's so great, looking into darkness with hoping to see something emerge as opposed to, ooh. You know, so Neptune says, you know, in our own personal lives, but also the outer planets, Neptune, Uranus, Pluto. Pluto's just been restored to some status by scientists. They go, it is the biggest guy out there, all right. It's bigger than Eris, Discord. But Pluto, Uranus, Neptune represent huge forces of nature's evolutionary ingenuity. And they're the keepers of the whole big guiding cultural story. And each one has a different quality. But Neptune, you know, is the invisible, misty, you know, atmospheric shift that wafts into culture that we don't see, but we feel it, and we're here to kind of attune to that feeling that precedes actual molecular change. You know, just in ourselves, we visualize, you know, and then the molecules follow along behind it. So in a big cultural way, Neptune and Pisces is about big oceanic kinship. We're all in this dream together. We're all related. We're remembering this kinship. There is no joy or suffering we do not all participate in. And so it's wafting out there. And it does say to each one of us, imagine that the most exiled, most forlorn, most whaley-whaley, most private, most good part of each one of us is about to be completely welcome. Like, whoosh, you know, like a whale spouting. And it's a feeling going, right, we're moving into a cultural atmosphere where the good and the imaginative is welcome. go, oh, what a feeling. So, you know, visioning the future brings us into collaborative intimacy with the desirable, which is why I like to say democratic animism now. And learning from everything, the poise of an egg. Now, part of the beauty of our gathering at this moment, at this very moment, is the moon and Saturn are conjoined at 23 degrees of Scorpio. Saturn is retrograde, going on a vision quest to reclaim what it means to be a powerful leader. You know, and with the moon, many things. It also relates to the collective. It reminds us that in so many traditions, the essence of ritual magic was always to intentionally spiral into collective group human mind, an expanded repertoire of tolerance and wisdom and responses. And so we can do that and go out wafting and spiraling. We are not under pressure here to react. Nobody we love is, you know, being threatened right now. So this great responsibility for people around the world and animals and creatures who are under much more hot reactive pressure, you know, we don't know what we would do if something precious in front of us was, but we're here, you know, and we want to tag team each other. So right now we're here to be able to wish cool responsiveness to all the hot reactive realms in the world. With no judging, because we could be that reactive person easily if circumstances were such. So, but we're here to waft that out. But it's great because, excuse me, the moon is the collective mind on one level. You know, Saturn is how we define leadership. When Saturn gets a bad rap, it really just means because we have outsourced it to incompetent sociopaths. And that's why it's, and we should be frightened of that. And so we're here to inhale what we've been outsourcing. You know, inhale mythology, the power of imagination, inhale leadership back in. And that's why also the moon Saturn says this dedication to this wonderful concept of complicity. Not shame, not blame, but it means whatever's going on in our personal lives and out there, we are complicitous. We are contributing energy to that story. But once we play with that idea, we can go, I'm inhaling, I'm withdrawing my complicity from that story. And I'm inhaling it, and I'm exhaling it into a better story. Yeah, somebody was saying, you know, people coming up going, I use all of your language. I go, I hope you attribute. But anyway, we discourage this, but encourage that. You know, again, you know, you never corner a mugger. You don't go, you know, gummy fuel. You go, not over there, but over here. There you go. You know, so we're energy guiding mahout beings. So the moon and Saturn are conjoined at 23 plus Scorpio. The image is a person giving a sermon on a mount. We go, well, we remember if we go further back, Saturn's going further back, backwards. You know, from Neil Douglas Klotz, who says Aramaic is the vernacular language that Jesus would have spoken. And he says, you know, the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, very beautiful, but they're actually even better. Because he says, what comes to us as blessed are the meek, which is kind of used by the reality police as to go, you know, give me all your money and you'll get, you know, something later in heaven. But he says in Aramaic, what we hear as blessed are the meek is more like, blessed are those who soften emotional rigidity within their hearts, for they shall have all the power of nature. Heart, you know, and some of them are quite similar, you know, blessed are the peacemakers, but in Aramaic, it's all tied to nature. Blessed are those who plant peace. All the metaphors are natural. May all of our metaphors be derived from nature. When people say, I want to really make this concrete, and I go, concrete, oh, I don't know, you know, is there another more fun word, you know, I want to make this into compost with worms, you know. And because it goes back to the false separation brokered by the reality police of spirit and nature. Because even, you know, even in Christianity, you know, in all of the religions, they were, you know, environmental. Well, it's a weird word, environmental stewardship, you know. But tending the natural world and kinship is at the root of all religions before they get snookered by the reality police into false service to the state. So we're going backwards. one way to think of squares, 90-degree angles in a chart, is where we've all taken on the assignment to get illusorily estranged principles to dance together in our hearts and in the world. That this square, you know, either you can be a credible person or a mystic person. We go, no, credible mystic, pragmatic mysticism, realistic dreamers, you know, utopians, science and poetry. They love each other. Again, they were all wedded to each other. So, you know, the defiant, these are false separations brokered by the reality police. When people have squares in their chart, you know, it's either or, again, two creates conflict, you know, or both, to spiral them together in some ingenious way, which is what we invite in. Again, Neptune says, if you're conundrum, you know, you can turn it over to your wise pony, or you can turn it over into the mudra of wonder, which forms our body into a beseeching chalice of invitational inquiry, going, I wonder, whoa, oh, there we go. It's whatever we wonder really attracts the lightning of Uranus revelation. I wonder how to resolve, oh, this. So we're dancing then with this, and we don't have to source it all. Part of the beauty of the equinox and the incarnation of Mars, and then Mars being in Libra, Venus's sign, Venus says, you know, you humans, you know, cooperate with everything. That's really just what magic means. But you don't have to source it all, but to invite it. You know, an invitation, it says, any dedicated act of beauty serves as an invitation for power to enter the world. You know, and dedicated acts of beauty trump tyranny. And that's also just drawing from, you know, sourdough starter, wonderful allies, Dionne Fortune, great writer in England. And there's a great moment where her character, Morgan Le Fay Morgan, who is a priestess of Isis in the modern world, her mind is all kerfuffled, things aren't going well, the guy is impossible, won't do the sacred tantric thing, you know, anyway. But she goes, she's like, and she goes back inside to her house and sees the simple vase of flowers, you know, just a simple vase of flowers that she had put there with dedication, which is Saturn. Saturn says anything we dedicate serves as an invitation. So she'd put the humble vase of flowers there dedicated to inviting Isis, Inanna, beauty into the world. So she, her mind's all kerfuffled, but she goes back in and she sees the full moon shining on this vase, and she can feel this downrush of energy, just you know, like we do sometimes, like goosebumps. And she goes, it didn't matter what my mind was naming. The dedicated act of beauty served as an invitation and had clearly been accepted. And in the language of the adepts, I was back on my contacts, which is this great kind of antique esoteric phrase, back on one's contacts, meaning when you're back in the land of serendip, when you're back in the synchronous connected flow, going, right. So dedicated acts of beauty trump kerfuffles, trump mind, trump tyranny every time. So Saturn, power of beauty, you know, very powerful. So I go, all right, even though I told Rob, you know, minutes ago, going, let's have a gathering, and look, you all came, so cute, who needs preparation? You know, because I go, you know, whoever shows up, it'll be completely cool. You know, it's a self-assembling, you know, if it's four people or who or all of you, fantastic, it's just wonderful. because there is so much, again, cahooting with us. So let me also set up part of the incredible generosity that is being proffered to us by whales and the sky story and the everything to forgive us our befoiblements, that we don't need to go over them going, leave them behind and dedicate to renewal. So Saturn in the sky is going backwards. Jupiter straight up overhead, power of stories. Jupiter storytelling, is story. It's the journey. The storyteller, the person who journeys, is the storyteller. You know, it's the power of blessing. It's all of those things. It's in Cancer, Big Mama Ocean again. It's called Exalted in Cancer, which is interesting. The journey home. We're all on the journey home. Cancer, again, home. You know, we're all journeying home. And the journey to provide safety for each other in the dangerous journey that we're all on, the whales, and may it be a culture of reciprocal blessing. So Jupiter was retrograde and then stationed and went direct, you know, a couple weeks ago. Saturn was going forward and then stationed and went retrograde. They're going, one's going forward and one's going backward to rendezvous. So they will be trine, this beautiful trine of Saturn and Jupiter. So it says internal Saturn dedication magnetizes the desirable external journey. And it's really, useful in so many ways to have Saturn, again, to be a person in deep gloom first, then have the Jupiter deal. Fairy tales are full of the issue of the wise and unwise use of magical wishes. And that's also, I've heard great critiques, you know, that put it just right about, you know, what is not quite right about the popularization, the good road, say, of metaphysics to things like sort of The Secret, you know, just chant for the car and you'll get the thing. It's like, no, maybe Saturn first. Maybe it's not a car that you want exactly, you know, rather than just the image thing. So in fairy tales, you know, the wise and unwise use of wishes. So in personal readings, you know, sometimes people get Jupiter transits first, anything you want. And they go, and it's a dangerous thing, anything you want without Saturn reflection. And they go, I'm going to chant, you know, for a pink Mercedes. And then they get Saturn later going, oh, what was I thinking? So it says fast first, then you feast, feast first, then you famine. You know, so the Saturn thing, the arduous thing, the imperfect thing, the difficult thing, you know, that compels a kind of humility, and then a humility that ties us into all people and beings in difficult circumstance, and then the wise use of magical wishes. So that's kind of where we're at now, going, what is it we really want? And that it would be a blessing for everyone. May you know, this desire to have, be, or do this thing, and may all beings in similar circumstance have this well-wishing. And always in proviso, you know, if this is part of inviting in what is truly best for everyone, come on in. And it's a small, huge distinction. Small things are huge. So again, dedication magnetizes opportunity for all of us to be messengers of the guiding, desirable meta story and resolvers of conflict, to come into circumstances as agents of cool response in a hot, reactive world. And to not get caught up, you know, we can feel the tendrils. And every time, you just even in micro, I could feel the tendrils. It's like, no, remember the whales, remember the vastness, remember the real thing. Whew. You know, and then, you know, not wanting to lose that, and then going, no, you can, you know, we we want to keep it with us. So there was some very dramatic, things. Hello. on the full moon, which was just Sunday, at 10:08 a.m. this time, everywhere. There was snow in Washington. There was a 4.4 earthquake, whatever. The Pacifica went back to its usual spells. I mean, all kinds of strange things. And we go, no, how witty. But we will not be seduced into having an opinion prematurely. Remember that the word prejudice means to prejudge. It means to have an opinion before one has respect. Before one has looked twice or three or four times, that's what prejudice means. If we're really about, you know, not being prejudiced, it means wait for it, not to have an opinion, certainly not to have an opinion first. That's part of the American demon. You know, I have a right to opinion. You know, I have the right to an opinion no matter how ill-informed within 10 seconds of hearing about anything. You know, I like it, I don't like it, I vote for this, I vote for that. They're screwing us over. It's like, no, that's prejudging. That is prejudice. You know, respect, look again. You know, again, don't think you know. Invite in the desirable. There we go. So that quality of San Ignacio Lagoon, that medicine, which really wants to become a model template of everything, of the best of humans cooperating wonderfully with each other to cooperate with the creature, you know, to form an alliance. It's the very, you know, kind of alliance and medicine we want to implement and dedicate to. Again, Saturn says, some things are always true, times when they're truer. Whatever we dedicate to now at the beginning of this season has a powerful resonance and will have everything to do with the quality of the story and the engagement and our role in it. And then us as inviters, you know, going, you can do that if you want, or I invite you to go backstage for a costume change because the role you are playing. You know, we're allowed to be... and again, you know, playful, surprising, and it's wonderful. I mean, it's a dodgy thing, you know. We can all run into trouble. I certainly can. Going, oops, no, maybe not completely graceful. Okay, back to the drawing board. Done that, because one wants to liberate everything, you know. And again, you know, Groucho Marx. You know, I've had a wonderful evening. This wasn't it, but I've had a wonderful evening. That's really useful. We go, you know, so it's not about being nice. It's compassion with sizzle. It's about, you know, Saturn and Scorpio with the moon. It's not about, it's about really knowing, earning the fifth act of redemption by really understanding what is terrible, but not prejudging, wondering how we can be agents of its transformation. So again, the dedication magnetizes the insight. So so on that full moon, you know, where we were, and some of our great Skookum team are here, great, you know, perfect, we're all perfectly befoibled. As David Grimes says, we are all befoibled superheroes stumbling gracefully into the future, going, we're all befoibled. I mean, certainly. But there was an incredible sandstorm, just an unbelievable sandstorm. We were out in the Pongas, and our guide said, you know, when it's more than 22 knots of wind, we have to come back in. And, oh, we got to go. But because we were so full, we didn't go, we go, okay. All right, doesn't seem that rough. And then right exactly, like the egg balancing on the equinox, exactly at the full moon, this unbelievable storm, you know, with wind and sand, and like you couldn't see, and you had, you know, grit in your teeth, and but it was amazing. But it was a kind of Goldilocks storm, because it was just enough to feel like whoa, and not so much that anybody got hurt or killed. But it was like amazing, like the kind of thing you read about, like in the Sahara, you know, like this. somebody found the the right word, the hubbub, the whatever. But it was like whoa, and sand everywhere, and in over everything, and this good little computer covered in sand. Everything was covered in sand. I was like, wow, what a thing. But mostly it was like, ooh, huge nature. And again, it was the moon, the full moon in Virgo, micro particles, you know, moon in Virgo, opposite sun in Pisces, ocean. And there we were in the microparticle sand on the edge of the ocean, the vast thing and the little thing. And again, one of our guides said, well, the sand remineralizes the ocean. And we go, that's fabulous. And it swept all the humans away so the whales could go. It's nice to have them around, but it's nice to have them gone too. But it was cleansing and wild, and all the locals said they'd never seen anything like that. It was amazing. And I did feel like, you know, all my smallness, small thoughts or impeding thoughts or worries or concerns, like so many great Native American poems are getting about, you know, all the small things I was concerned about. But then when we connect with vastness, it's like, nothing. And I did. I felt like the nafs, you know, that wonderful word, you know, that's a sort of Sufi Islamic word for the small, hungry, grasping child within us that comes from a big family and is worried about not getting seconds of dessert. You know, whatever. You know, and everything comes up on a journey. You know, Mark Twain said a real journey is where halfway through you wish you were home. You know, and, you know, journeys. Our word to travel comes from French word travail, which means work. And the German word means to be ripped, into freedom. We go, that's fun. And then it's interesting that the Greek word for travel means a three-pronged trident. We go, how interesting that all travel is presided over by Neptune in some way. Again, etymology. But I did. I was sort of standing up in the wind, and some allies were, you know, kind of gathering around after I had this great moment of going, I think my nafs have been swept away, my obscuring thoughts, my kind of petty little things like, you know, they do wait around and hop back on. But for a moment, they're gone. And I was thinking of the whales and how wonderful and how generous, and it was just fantastic, and how we want to be like them. And I was then thinking about the incredible, terrible, sad, important to see movie Blackfish. How many people have seen Blackfish? Okay, it's on CNN over and over again, and it's hard. But again, it's like Saturn Scorpio. Got to know in order to effectively bless. Got to know what we're doing as a species. And it's again, you know, all imprisonment of incredibly amazing creatures for human spectacle and the toxic mimic of intimacy. You know, so Blackfish deals especially with SeaWorld and the imprisonment of orcas, who are so kinned and so clanned, and to pluck these creatures from their family, when we know from MRIs that they have parts of the brain, that all cetaceans have part of the brain that we humans do not have, that are about family and kinship. We need to learn from them, not imprison them. And that's why, you know, we say all the colonizer is actually seeking the medicine of what he colonizes and oppresses, but doesn't know it. You know, again, England needed the metaphysic of India. You know, we in America need the beauty of the Middle East in some way. And the people who created SeaWorld need what the orcas have, but they don't understand it that way, and it's crudely literalized. So we want to be agents of what you're really hungry for. But one of the most terrible, sad moments in the film is where orca babies, you know, the child will stay with its mother and its family forever. And at SeaWorld, they decide to sell the baby of this mother. And it's on film, and they're taking it away into a stretcher and into a truck and into an airplane. And even as it's getting on the airplane, the mother is sounding this echolocation that they've never heard before, which is far, far, you know, where are you? It's like, oh, my God. It's heartbreaking. So at first I was, it was the windstorm and the whales and the thing. I was going, oh, you know, those people have murdered their own hearts. And I had little kind of, and then I was like, no, to learn from the whales. You know, people have murdered their hearts. May they be sent to a place where their hearts can be healed. What if we had a culture that was so deeply wise that we replaced our desire for retribution and punishment with the desire for healing and replaced it with curiosity as well? My goodness, how did this happen to you that your heart was so damaged that you did not feel kinship? Let us send you to, you know, an island of dictators or whatever, and let there be homeopaths and whales and, you know, whatever. I mean, what if that? And that was what the windstorm kind of gave to me, going, right, what about that enormous of imagining? What if we had a culture whose impulse was to heal rather than to punish? You know, in Hawthorne says, beware the impulse to punish. You know, kind of, and that's why I love, again, redefining the word forgive, because it came out of a conversation which we go, you know, me and Great Board Op go, right, I don't even know what it means. I don't want to condone, you know, I forgive you. You know, condone behavior, but to give energy for change, going, oh, right. You know, may they be sent to an island to heal their hearts. And again, it's why we're also allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. Something I've found incredibly effective over the years is, the essence of ritual magic is literalized metaphors. So my great ancestor now, ally Marcelino Santero, used to say, again, Santeria is literalized metaphor. If somebody's, you know, behaving badly, you write their name on a piece of paper and you put it in an ice cube tray in the freezer to cool them out. And that's fun. That's fun. And you can go back to your life without grumpiness, going, the larger forces will work with it. But what I added to it was, you know, may all those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. And then we go, would I accept that? Yeah. You know, it's a bold wager. It's a bold, important gamble. Jupiter also is about journey, travel, blessing, and gambling. And go, yeah, okay. You know, if I were abusing power, let me be swirled to a place where I could no longer harm myself by harming others. Yeah, okay, let it go. And I think that's a very effective thing to carry in our magic backpacks. We have so many wise things. Metaphoric agility says when we're feeling oppressed and burdened and like weighted down, you know, and then metaphoric trickster agility would say we think it's the weight of the burden of our lives. And metaphoric agility says, no, it's the weight of your magic backpack that you've been wearing since 1948. It's really heavy and it's full of great things. Why don't you take off that weight, the magic backpack, and pour forth its contents and see everything. It's like Dorothy's slippers are there, my God, and the power of imagination and dreams, and may all those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. Everything we need is in that backpack. The harumphitude composter, which is really useful to work because it says that's what makes for effective communication. If we, see, this is the Moon, Saturn, Scorpio thing. You know, Scorpio, you know, as a dynamic, you know, bless their hearts. It's part of us in everywhere. But, you know, they're all secret and intrigue. And as Marcelino would say, he goes, even when I'm not up to something sneaky, I want people to think that I am. You know, so Scorpio is the thing that has, you know, sex as its license plate going, ah, you know, or when people lean over in a coffee house and hear astrology going, and what sign am I? And we go, Scorpio. And they go, oh. But what it relates to as part of all of us is no quality of intelligence, and all these things are in all of us, and they're all equal. There's no cooler thing, you know. But it is the part of us that radiates our internal assessment of others, regardless of what we say. You know, so when people go, "I was very polite to that person and they reacted badly," we go, there's a larger story here. You internally, you know, Scorpio, how to have insight and discernment but not judgment. You know, again, how to see the funky, creepy stuff in ourselves and others and go, I wonder what the medicine for this would be, as opposed to, which is imprisoning. You know, one is diagnosis. If we put the hyphen in diagnosis, we have dia hyphen gnosis, meaning a diagnosis invites all wisdom to come into play for healing. Critique, you know, is important. We want critique. We want high standards. We want sizzle play. We don't want to just go... but the Scorpio dynamic is very witty, because it means that, you know, if one perceives accurately that somebody is behaving like a dingbat, but it's when one then begins to mind that, going not dealing with it, not addressing it, and then beginning to mind, at that point, no matter what one says, no matter how politely, is going to create a little conflagration. You go, "Excuse me, would you mind not?" And the person goes, "Then," and then they got to say, "I was very polite," and that person freaked out. No, the backstage dynamic is, you know, "Would you mind not? You are a dingbat. You are a..." And they go, you know, it's again, you know, it's, you know, people on the street are very psychic and responsive. You know, it's the positive version, you know, is my collaborator often, Ami. You know, we walk down the street in D.C. and to every homeless person, she goes, "Hello, King." And each one of them says right away back to her, "Hello, Queen." And I go, "Ami, do you know these people?" And she's like, "No." You know, whatever we speak to in another is the fairy tale myth we're invoking, and that part of them we're inviting to play. So, see, on the other hand, if one simply accurately perceives somebody behaving like a dingbat but does not mind, you're just like, "Huh." You could say, "Hey, that's, you know, that kind of behavior is what, you know, is leading to the conflagration of the world." But if there's no attitude, person will take it, and it will be a kind of liberating to the whole atmosphere. It's just something to experiment and play with. So when things blow up in our face, we get to go, without judging ourselves either, with infinite compassion, with sizzle, "I wonder why I directed the movie that way. And in case I did, let's go into major story rewrite." You know, it doesn't have to be true. It's a metaphorically agile way of working, that whatever's coming at us, we go, "Why would I have directed the movie that way? Or my ancestral conditioning would have done that. In case that's true, you know, let me, you know, go back into story rewrite." Again, something I use all the time, but I got to do it because I don't know anything better. Because we will tease it into many more great examples. But it is, you know, you met person UN in charge of refugee camps. You know, all refugee tents in the world are in use for the last 10 years. We live in a world of refugees, humans, plants, animals, everything. We all got to have to collaborate ingeniously together to pull off some accord. But he did say this story about the scariest moment in his life when, the week before, UN colleagues had been kidnapped and murdered in African country. And he was walking down the street with colleagues, and they were kidnapped. They were shoved into the back of this van, and there were men with AK-47s and shaky hands, bloodshot eyes, pointing them at them. And they really thought, we're going to die. But then he said to his colleagues, "We've got to change the story. We're not being kidnapped. We're being helped in a complex environment." So they began to thank their captors. "Thank you so much for keeping us safe in this complex environment." And their captors were like puzzled. Again, surprise. Surprise is good. You know, they were like, "You're not, you know." And then that night when the captors locked them up, the captors said, "Don't worry. We're putting a guard outside so you'll be safe." And then 3 days later, let them go. This is the power in our magic backpacks for instant story rewrite. you know, at any kerfuffle, you go, wait a minute, time out, backstage, move the scenery around, change the costumes. You're no longer killers, now you're helpers. We're no longer victims, we're just kind of confused honkies. All right, everybody back on stage, new story, different story, and now we're grateful to you, rather than, again, surprising. So it's, again, dissolving, because, see, if we are concerned at the lack of heart, what could cause a SeaWorld person to cause so much pain to separate a mother and child or anything in the world of all the horrors we're seeing? Like, oh, what's that? But how do we not become like that in our desire to punish that? How do we not harden our hearts in order to punish hardened hearts? And we go, right, we strengthen whatever we oppose, says Ursula Le Guin. Again, 2, conflict, 3, unifying story. Let's find a better story together. dissolving the reaction, so not becoming a reactive sociopath when dealing with reactive sociopathy, to not become what we oppose by not opposing it, but by changing the story and inviting a better story, and may it be surprising. Now, part of the beauty and symmetry of what we're headed to, this season that is already kind of here in a way, but we love patterns. We are pattern-tracking beings. When they wire humans up to kind of an EKG, sex good, shelter good, food good, but almost equal is putting pieces of puzzles in place. The brain just has a little orgasm, like, whoa! We love patterns. So pattern-tracking beings. So as we move into April, there's this beautiful symmetry. Pluto, now at its stationing degree, will station at 13 degrees of Capricorn. Uranus will be at 13 degrees of Aries. Jupiter will be at 13 degrees of Cancer. Mars will be at 13 degrees of Libra. We go, oh, this is so fabulous. What does it mean? Anyway, it's a grand square. It's a grand square at 13, 13, 13. Again, squares are where we're assigned to get illusorily conflicting things to dance together. So Jupiter, Pluto is the transformative story change, in our own lives, a little practice, to the larger thing. We want major story rewrite, the guiding story. When we think of Obama, rather than be disappointed, again, people are operating on multiple mythological levels. What is the desirable to see? And against all odds. And people go, he's in bed with the, and we go, well, that's one true story, but there's 800 simultaneous, and again, against all odds. Now, the complexity and intrigue and whatever that we want to compost, of the Ukraine and the Crimea and whatever, complicated things, because apparently Putin and Obama were actually doing some good backstage deals about Syria and about preventing, Israel from attacking Iran, and they were doing, and the neocons wanted to disrupt. Anyway, there's all that stuff. So it makes it harder, apparently, for Obama to come out against the XL pipeline because of all this. And then realistic people are saying, well, he's probably going to cut a deal, approve the XL pipeline, but have a carbon tax, whatever. And I go, no, that's not desirable enough. Let's go for desirable. Let's not, snatch failure from the jaws of victory. Let's go for, again, the guiding image without expectation is the partner of disappointment. Oh, I knew. Okay. But Uranus says, the trickster says, I'm going to connect, each person to the coolest thing possible. All I want from everybody is willingness. And we go, we're willing. We're hoisting ourselves with willingness. So we want to enter into the desirable future without expectation and its consequent disappointment, because that's carrying around a little melancholy prison for oneself and everybody, like, oh, I knew you. People get addicted to letting people down, going, you expect this of me? I have to disappoint you. Anyway, so we want to compost all that. compost all that, and then go, okay, what is the, we're not expecting, but we're willing. Willing like intending, and willing like, hey, what the hell, come on, is a whole different, a small verbal distinction, a huge energetic change. So I like the image, against all odds, of Obama, really being able, maybe as we get to April, to be able to unfold a whole film thing for America, a whole story going, here's the, like Bob Goff, here's the fuels from hell, here's the thing, here's that thing, and so we're calling upon the ornery, disobedient, ingenious spirit of the country, whatever, for this experiment, and by the way, we're not going to do the XL pipeline because they know we're doing this thing. So I like just not expecting, not counting on it, but just willing that direction. action, going, let's animate that story. That 13, 13, 13, Mars Libra, may our species have manners and enter into the collaborative dance again. Jupiter, the power of the story change. You know, all creatures are journeying home. May they be safe. All life deserves safety. A wonderful life for the children of all species. When I talk to warmongers, you know, we go, let's go to the root of the thing, the root of the thing. The answer to terrorism is a wonderful life for all children. And they all go, yeah. So, wonderful life for all children. Okay, can we all agree on that? Yes, we can. So it says, you know, always start with the desirable image, not the realistic how. It's the realistic how that makes people sides and goes, no, no, no. If we start with the desirable image, then avenues of synchronicity open up that were not apparent. So whether it's a small group or a large group or a peace in the Middle East, you know, start with the desirable story. You know, a wonderful life for all children. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, we're agreed on that. How about food and safety? Yes, yes. How about calling upon ingenuity? Yes, yes. You know, and then it begins to open up. So Jupiter-Pluto is also the transformative power to direct collective attention to a redemptive story about manners and calling forth the goodness, inviting the goodness in each person. And again, you know, I am your agent in Washington, D.C., descending to the conservative political action conference every now and then into the belly of the underworld neocon libertarian right-wing beast to find allies, and there are some. You know, and again, there are some, and but it's also practice for, you know, pulling out my harumphitude composter, because clear communication is only possible, remember the Scorpio thing, once we've composted our attitudinal contempt. Contempt is the death of intimacy. Any communication after contempt is only going to lead to heat in world. So pulling out the, you know, and when I can't sufficiently compost my harumphitude, then my aspiration is like, you know, then don't wait, because it's not going to add to the beauty of the world. Compost the harumphitude and then be surprising, like telling the, you know, right-wing Ayn Rand Austrian economist going, you know, all named Wolfgang, you know, and they were like, who are you? And I go, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And they're like, that is so cool. So, again, you know, if I said I'm an angry feminist environment, you know, whatever. I mean, that wouldn't be nearly as much fun. If they've never heard of it, there's no defenses, and it's an invitation to play. Going, wow, yeah, that's really great. So may we be surprising. May our dedication lead us to surprising. May we be agents of liberation. Compost, not becoming what we oppose. No hardening of heart. No hardening of heart. Again, the whales did not harden their hearts. They extended an invitation to Pachico and then to all of us to play, from murder to play. Even though undoubtedly in their DNA there's a memory of humans being horrible, that is not affecting. And again, it's in all the books and in all of our true story, you know, these beings who were, you know, bigger than our boat, and there was just no sense of fear ever, only like yearning. And, you know, the little naffs going, oh, like us more, like us, our boat more than the other boat, and like me, aren't I special? No, and they're like, no, we like everybody. We like, you know, the dingbat tourists as well as, you know, whatever. We like everybody equally. And like, oh, okay. So there's no specialness, no groovy wuzza-wuzza there, just universally like, hello, yeah, hi. Yeah, so the power of nature. So it was a fantastic full moon leading to this. And then part of the full moon is again embracing our befoiblements, embracing our befoiblements. I love, you know, Philip K. Dick, just to honor his ancestral self. But a good thing about, you know, how do we honor our own imperfections as leading us to a greater heart? And he said, my incompetence had called forth invisible friends. Had I been more gifted, I would not know of them. It was, in my mind, a good trade. Because of my limitations, an entire new universe had revealed itself to me, a benign and living hyper-environment endowed with absolute wisdom. Wow, I said to myself, you can't beat that. Yeah, and it's great. He called it VALIS, Vast Active Living Intelligence System. And that's what you feel. That's why people burst into tears with the whales, because they are kind of emissaries and stirring memories in our giant collective brains that we're all part of a vast active living intelligence system, infinitely forgiving of our befoiblements and inviting us to do so as well. And the beguilingness. Oh, many other things that we'll get to with some other future thing. Ancestors, dreams, wonderful beings, forgiving things. Perhaps we will begin to close. Many people sent me the wonderful Mary Oliver poem about whales. Do you know this? It was several people seeing the wonderful picture that an ally of ours took of me and whales, which I liked so much. But then they sent this wonderful poem, which I find so great. So it's Mary Oliver. You know, we know Mary Oliver, right? I mean, who always starts from nature. And see, again, befoibled, you know, you do not have to be perfect, as she says. You do not have to crawl on your knees for 100 miles. You want to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. There's Mars. You know, and so she's a chain-smoking, grumpy, reclusive, beautiful person. And we go, that's adorable. You know, chain smoking her Marlboros out in nature. You know, New Age people be, that's appalling. You know, my favorite poet is, you know, and we go, yeah, it's adorable. I like it. She won't go anywhere where she can't chain smoke in her room. And I go, that's adorable. Okay. You know, because it's so unholy. You know, so she says, humpbacks. There is all around us this country of original fire. Okay, so green fire. You know what I mean. The sky, after all, stops at nothing, so something has to be holding our bodies in its rich and timeless stables, or else we would fly away off Stellwagen, off the Cape. Off the Cape, the humpbacks rise, carrying their tonnage of barnacles and joy. They leap through the water. They nuzzle back under it like children at play. They sing, too, and not for any reason you can imagine. Three of them rise to the surface near the bow of the boat, then dive deeply, their huge scarred flukes tipped to the air. We wait, not knowing just where it will happen. Suddenly, they smash through the surface. Someone begins shouting... Excuse me. Someone begins shouting for joy, and you realize it's yourself as they surge upward, and as you see the first time how huge they are, as they breach and dive and breach again through the shining blue flowers of the split water, and you see them for some unbelievable part of a moment against the sky, like nothing you've ever imagined. Like the myth of the fifth morning galloping out of darkness, pouring heavenward, spinning. Then they crash back under those black silks, and we all fall back together into that wet fire. You know what I mean. I know a captain who has seen them playing with seaweed, swimming through the green islands, tossing the slippery branches into the air. I know a whale that will come to the boat whenever she can and nudge it gently along the bow with her long flipper. I know several lives worth living. Listen. Whatever it is you try to do with your life, nothing will ever dazzle you like the dreams of your body, its spirit longing to fly while the deadweight bones toss their dark mane and hurry back into the fields of glittering fire, where everything, even the great whale, throbs with song. Go, Mary. It's beautiful. You know, we go, poignancy is kinship. Poignancy is kinship. You know, and there's so much. And There's a couple of beautiful words. So to conjure, you know, to take with you the exercise of conjuring your ride, you know, from all that you're drawn to, the grasshopper, the small, uncharismatic megafloras, the whatever, that may we be sufficiently skookum for serendipitous, synchronous, spiraling forth blessing. You know, so let us all see our, you know, each other, you know, on our rides, you know, sallying forth, you know, setting sail. And there's two great words that I want to leave us all with as reciprocal blessing, encouragements. There's a word, aizon. It's an Amharic word, and it's used to express support and encouragement to tackle challenges when one is engaging on a difficult journey or undertake something difficult. Aizan. We go, aizan, aizan. And the other one, again, comes from French circus, which is alley-oop, and it's where we assist each other. Again, like the whales assist each other. They go through these exercises, this great book, you know, many things that they do that are just like, oh, so a baby whale will beach itself maybe by accident, maybe on purpose, because they do this a number of times, on a sandbar, and then one whale will come up on one side of it, and another whale will come up on the other side of it, and they go, toom, 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 wah. You know, may we be like that. So that's a kind of alley-oop. So let us adjourn the evening with a reciprocal blessing of alley-oop to everybody on the count of three. One, two, three. Alley-oop! Alley-oop. Yes, thank you, team.